Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform.
Enjoy today's episode.
Hey, everyone. Today's episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox partners with people who are dedicated to doing the right thing, never cutting corners and always looking for ways to improve. Discover why they're the trusted source of high-quality protein for families across the country. At ButcherBox, they believe in better. For them, that means caring about their animals and the planet, treating our planet with respect. It means improving the lives of animals and the livelihoods of farmers, and ultimately, it means better meals enjoyed together. The protein from ButcherBox is never given antibiotics or added hormones. It's humanely raised. Our family loves the convenience and quality and knowing that we are getting humanely raised and sustainably harvest protein. You can customize your box with the right amount of food and variety of meat to fit your family's individual needs. If you're interested in getting a special offer, go ahead and head to healinggroundmovement.com/resources to follow the link for ButcherBox. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I am your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. And with me today, I am so excited to have another conversation with Elizabeth Solomon. We were just chatting before we hit record and we talked about 2 months ago. And I think we went for an hour and it was just the most phenomenal conversation about emotional intelligence and authenticity and vulnerability and all of those warm, gooey things that really have the power to change your life and presence and even your health in the world. So let me tell you a little bit more about Elizabeth so you can love her as much as I do. Elizabeth Solomon helps leaders, entrepreneurs, and organizations clarify their purpose and redefine business as usual. She is a Goleman EI Emotional Intelligence Certified Coach, experienced writer, brand story consultant, and workplace strategist invested in equity and positive social change. With a master's degree in organizational psychology, expertise in emotional intelligence, 12 years as a corporate culture researcher, and decades of awareness-centered lived experience, she helps her clients think critically about the intersection of storytelling, culture, leadership, and social change. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Carly. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, that is quite a laundry list of experience.
I know, hearing it read back to me, I'm like, oof.
Sometimes I feel like when I hear my bio, it's like, that was exhausting to be her.
Yeah. What was she doing all these decades? My Lord. Yeah.
Why? Because now we're here.
Yeah.
So why? Where did you start? How did you arrive here with the kind of intersection of emotional intelligence, vulnerability, and culture? I mean, it's such a place to be, especially these days.
Yeah. One of my kind of key like anchor stories is me as a child on an airplane when I was about, gosh, I must have been 6 years old with my dad flying back from a visit to my grandmother in Florida. And we were on a night flight and the plane was taking off. And I actually remember this moment, but I remember it even more because my dad retold me this story again and again. So we're sitting on the airplane and I'm looking out the window and all the lights kind of twinkle and disappear. And I turned to my dad and I said, "So many people, so little time." And my dad says that he was like, you know, like, whoa, okay, that's a really big statement for a child to make. But I call that my starting point because I think I've always just had this feeling of like, oh, wow, like we are in this sort of rapidly moving, rapidly transforming world. There are billions of human beings on the planet. And quite honestly, there's a lot of joy and a lot of pain and a lot of transformation that we need to see. And, you know, hearing those words, so many people, so little time, now in the context of things like global warming and all of the sort of unrest that we are experiencing, you know, I'm kind of like, whoa, that little girl was already like, she already knew.
she saw what was coming down the pipe.
So that's kind of like, you know, that says a little bit about my purpose. And then for most of my childhood, I thought I was going to be a therapist. That was my big goal, was to be a therapist. And I had this image that I just wanted to sit all day and talk to people and listen to their stories. And then I was going to produce this really big, like beautifully laid out, you know, I think the company's Fadon, who makes those gorgeous coffee table books. I was going to produce one of those with people's photographs and their stories next to them. And so that sort of desire to sit with people and listen to their stories and talk about mindset and development and to relay those stories and write those stories was always there. So I did end up pursuing, for grad school, I decided I was going to be, you know, go and pursue a master's in psychology, and ended up looking at the various degrees in that field and decided I was going to go to California and pursue, my degree in marriage and family therapy. And I kind of happened upon a program in which I could do a double master's in marriage, family therapy, and organizational psychology. And I had always had this really deep interest in systems. High school was like a really hard time for me. I was like, I don't understand what's going on here. I was like attuned to some of the mixed messaging within that environment of like, you're an adult, but you have to ask for a pass to go to the bathroom. That was like really hard for me to reconcile moments like that.
Yeah.
So I already sort of had that like organizational culture lens of like, what's really happening, you know, on a systems level here. But happening upon that master's program and pursuing those two degrees concurrently was a huge pivotal moment for me and a real blessing, because I think it is really important to sort of be able to attune to what's happening for us as individuals and to be able to work one-on-one with people, but to always be able to attune to what's happening in the environment. How is the system constructed? What are the rules? What are the norms, et cetera? So
and I think
that answered your question.
and I forgot about the systems that we share a systems obsession. And at the risk of derailing our conversation on emotional intelligence, but I think that when we talk about authenticity and vulnerability, it does not exist in a vacuum, because who we are authentically in a moment within the systems of our family. And I started off in marriage and family therapy too. That was my first career goal. I mean, that's just, but it's all systems. It's like, what is wrong with this system?
Yeah.
And so much. So who you are within one system is going to be different than who you are in another system. And whether that's a corporate culture or a social culture, and really with the advent of social media just exploding over the last couple of decades, as a global culture as well, we are now engaging with tens of thousands of people more than we were ever meant to as humans. Mm-hmm. So I would love to spend a little bit of time talking about why systems matter when it comes to being authentic and vulnerable within them.
I think you just, you know, you answered that question in part, which is that we are, you know, I wanted to say we are different people in different places, and that might feel a little bit like, I'm not trying to say that, we wear a bunch of masks or that we're constantly sort of being chameleons or transforming ourselves. But I think different places bring out different aspects of us. And travel is a really great example of this. I love traveling because every time I go to a new country, I discover truly like a different part of myself, and who I am authentically in that place might look a little bit different than who I am authentically in another place. So I think the systems piece is really important. And one of the kind of roadblocks that I hit when thinking about focusing in on one-on-one therapy was that awareness of like, we live in a context, like we live in a cultural context, we live in a family system, we live in an organizational context. And so those things really have to be accounted for. And I also think we are in relationship with the systems we are in. And so self-awareness, which is the base of emotional intelligence, happens in part through our own introspection, and it happens in part through feedback from the system.
And I love that being, I just wrote that as I was writing down, we are in relationship with the systems. And I think we don't really consider that is part of our interplay. And a previous guest and dear friend, Kent Frazier, introduced me to the quote from Krishnamurti, which I am going to paraphrase and perhaps butcher just a little bit. But the sentiment is, it is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. I just, every time I hear that, I get goosebumps. And I think our longtime listeners are going to be like, there she goes with the quote again. Yeah.
it's a good one. I'm like, you could repeat that every episode and it would be fine in my book. Yeah.
We ran the whole podcast. But what we're talking about is within that system, within that society, if you are well adjusted to it and being in relationship with the rules of society, and we can even take like the high school confusion of I am an adult, but I have to ask for a pass to go to the bathroom. I am engaging with the rules of the system. And if I'm well adjusted to it, I'm really comfortable with the confusion and lack of clarity. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not well adjusted to it because there is not lack of clarity and there's no clarity in high school. And and that is my relationship with it. And then that starts to show up in my own personal experience. And that shows up in my experience as either being anxious or depressed or confused or lost or very comfortable within this system that lacks clarity because I don't need it. Mm-hmm. We are in relationship with our world, and that same thing happens in our family systems and our cultural systems at large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you're talking, one of the things that's coming to mind is values, which, you know, in my work with individuals in a coaching sense and in my work with organizations in a consulting sense, values are always like a really strong starting place, right? And so when I think about this interaction between the individual and the system, I think our values both inform and are informed by systems. And we can be in systems where like there's a bit of a values rub, right? So for me, like a really big value of mine is freedom or autonomy or sovereignty, right? Yeah. So having to ask for a bathroom pass for me when that was such a strong value in me already was like, oh, there's dissonance between me and this system, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think people experience dissonance between themselves and a system often, right? And then the question becomes, to what degree do we speak to that dissonance or even try and sort of rectify that dissonance? And to what degree do we just do as you're saying, where we say, okay, never mind, that's just the system, right? Which, and this is hard because this gets to our sense of agency and our sense of power, right? And that's informed by many, 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 many things, including the system itself. So,
and I love you bringing up dissonance here. And I'd love if you would give our listeners sort of a Cliff Notes definition of what dissonance is, because I think it's something that we all experience on a daily, hourly, moment to moment basis. But do we know that that's what we're calling what, you know, maybe we're giving it a different name in our own lives?
Yeah, I think like the most sort of simple definition of dissonance that comes to mind is quite honestly when something doesn't feel right, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like when you're, and I think dissonance happens in a moment too, when we're being given, again, back to the example of high school, we're being given one message, right? Where people are saying, you're becoming an adult. We want you to step into your independence. We're doing all this work as a school system to sort of, you know, prepare you at this developmental level to go out into the world. But when it comes to your own body and your own bodily needs, we don't trust you to just sort of get up and walk out of the room when you need to take care of yourself and come back. Like you still need to ask someone who's in power to do that. And so to me, that's dissonance. That's like one message being given in one direction and then a norm being established that undercuts that message. And I think we feel that, right? We feel that all the time in our bodies where we're like, something's not feeling right here, or I'm like caught between two truths. One of those truths is spoken and one of those truths is felt.
And I think that having those two pieces, because I think in a lot of ways, that's where it shows up is what is the spoken rule and what is the practiced rule? And then there's I'm feeling quotey today. And I don't know who this one belongs to, but it is, what you're doing is so loud, I can't hear what you're saying. And so we have that basis of existing in really what amounts to peer pressure, cultural pressure of norms versus what are the spoken rules and do they contradict each other? Do we care that they contradict each other? And then how can we show up authentically when there are opposing directions in front of us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just thinking, you know, again, working on the organizational level, this is a conversation I have with clients a lot when we're talking about establishing or codifying a set of values. And so, you know, when I'm working particularly with smaller organizations that might not yet have articulated those values, right? Mm-hmm. And I always say, like, values should be informed by like what you're already doing. So our job here is not to like espouse a set of values that aren't already somewhat in practice. Like some of those values may be aspirational in nature, but they're not completely outside the realm of what's happening because people know. I mean, it's like, that's the biggest, one of the bigger issues, I think, in the sort of corporate culture land is people are like, we're supposedly have this really strong culture. Like there's these values and they're written down on a cube and they sit on my desk and I look at them every day. But like when it comes to my actual interactions within the organization, I'm not feeling those values. Or when it comes to leadership's decision-making, I'm not seeing those values in action. Similarly in an individual sense, when clients come and they're feeling a sense of agitation or discontent, often it's because one of their core values is being challenged in some way in a moment, or they're not fully being able to express that value.
And what an amazing point. And I see so, it would be hard to pick just one, but there are so many examples over the last year and a half, 2 years, where we see that culturally at large, as things get louder and more extreme in our reactions to things around healthcare and social justice, that there are things that are being said, there are values that are being acted, and sometimes they match, sometimes they don't. And we see a lot of groups of people coming back to this this dance with authenticity within themselves and within the system in which they are engaging. And some of these systems are unavoidable. And yeah. can't quit your job. You can't quit your country. But so expatriates, it happens.
I mean, it does happen. Like it happens. Yeah.
So when we're talking about this and coming to an idea of authenticity and what that feels like and what it is to embody, and why is it important to even talk about it? Why aren't we saying, well, you know, there's the system. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the power of the system. Why is that authentic position within that system and in that values important?
Oh, there's so many reasons I feel like it's important. I mean, I think, you know, if I'm to sort of think through the framework of emotional intelligence, for example, so the framework of EI that I work with, I have worked with and studied extensively under Daniel Goleman. And so his framework is the framework of emotional intelligence that I work into my coaching. And the entire basis of emotional intelligence is self-awareness. So again, I'm thinking, you know, in order to really be authentic, we have to even know what that authenticity is inside of ourselves. Like we really have to know like what, like who am I? What do I value? Where do I feel most alive? Where am I motivated from? How do I show up in my relationships? Right. I mean, these are just all beginning questions to even, I think, step towards a sense of authenticity. And I mean, I would argue that like authenticity is really a key component of feeling fulfilled and satisfied and happy and joyful in one's life, right? And I think it's also not something that's static because we are constantly changing and evolving human beings. And so what can feel deeply authentic in a moment may a year, 2 year, 3 years down the line have shifted ever so slightly as we have shifted.
And I think that's great. We were going to talk about risk as well, but this is just such a great opening. When we talk about dissonance and we talk about challenge, I think it's really easy to get into a mindset personally of, you know, that's uncomfortable. I don't want to touch that. And being in that place of discomfort, but having it challenge something that you have self-awareness about, that you have a personal authenticity surrounding, it's an opportunity to poke and prod this self-awareness and see if it still fits. I mean, real opportunity in that dissonance, just as there is discomfort and an opportunity to push it too far. I feel like I lost me a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think part of what I'm hearing and what you're saying is that like dissonance actually is an opportunity for self-awareness. So a moment of dissonance tells us a lot about our feelings, our experiences, our values. But also, you know, as you're moving into talking about risk-taking, what came to mind was like the sort of optimal zone of learning or the optimal zone of challenge, right? So, and I mean, a lot, anyone out there who is a teacher will have a lot of language for this, but it's like, when we're learning something new, we want that thing to be just challenging enough that like we are pushed to our edge, but not so challenging that we shut down and go into a state of frustration, right? And I think the same is true for authenticity and vulnerability, which is that we want to have a stretch zone. And there's actually a teacher and researcher, his name's David Bradford, and he teaches a course at Stanford called Touchy Feely, which is in Stanford School of Business. So good. Yeah. And I think actually that's not the technical name of the course, but that's what students and everyone across Stanford calls it. And it's an incredibly popular course. And he and his co-teacher wrote a book called Connect. And he offered up this little percentage, which is practicing, particularly, you know, in the beginning of rapport building or in the beginning of a relationship, like what is a risk we can take that's 15% outside of our comfort zone? And I've been kind of obsessed with this 15% because I'm like, what does it feel like to take like a 15% risk towards mm-hmm. authenticity, right? Because I think this, you know, there's a lot right now about authenticity and vulnerability. And once we take a risk and it proves to be okay, you know, the environment tells us, okay, you're safe. It was okay to mm-hmm. disclose that. It was okay to be authentic in that way. Sometimes that risk becomes our new normal, right? So then we kind of walk through the world and we're like, this is me being authentic and vulnerable in a way that is still safe. And so I've been thinking, how do we perpetually keep pushing that 15% edge, right? So we try something, it's well received. And then we're like, we sit in that for a minute and then we're like, okay, I can push myself to be even a little bit more authentic mm-hmm. now, because now my starting point is here instead of here. Does that make sense? That's just one of the ways I've been thinking about this.
Oh, I love that. And I'm just, I think that 15% is a great language and application in kind of all areas where we might seek to change as humans, because I think we are, and I don't know if this is how we are hardwired or if it has just become, again, that system, that cultural norm where it's an all or nothing. I'm going to dive into the deep end of this pool. My boundaries are going to be perfect. You are never going to see a more real version of me. Wow, that was really hard. And I just got the crud beat out of me. Yeah. And so we do this yo-yo thing. And we do it in yo-yo dieting. We do it in, I'm a couch potato, but now I'm going to go do CrossFit. We expect 100% right out the gate. And I love this 15% and this 15% challenge of, it is a vulnerable choice to move outside your comfort zone by that area, that amount. And that would be a measurable distance to build on. Mm-hmm. So that if I'm going to be 15% more active today, if I'm going to eat 15% more real food rather than processed garbage, if I'm going to drink 15% less soda or smoke cigarettes or, as well as I'm going to be 15% more vulnerable. I'm going to talk to that person that I know there's a really solid chance that I am making all of this up in my head and that person's going to receive me. That's a reasonable risk. Mm. And just like you said, that builds the next platform. That's how we start to escalate to being, you know, that quote unquote best version of ourselves that we imagine is outside our reach.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful, you know, I think there's been so much this summer. I mean, coaching wise, I tend to see things. I mean, I love working with people because you get to see themes pop up, right? And it's like, it pops up with one client and then next thing you know, it's like, and I'm sure you see this in your practice too, where you're like, okay, I guess we're all operating, like the collective consciousness is very real. And
yeah.
This summer, a lot of my work with my clients and actually in the spring too, has been around this mantra of like slow and steady wins the race, right? Mm. And really grappling with like the deep state of impatience that many of us sit with, this deep state of all or nothing. And I think it's particularly hard because we live in such an incredibly fast-paced world. Social media shows us images that feels so, you know, we're all kind of living in this like little FOMO reality sometimes, yeah. right? Where we're like, and there's this whole cultural narrative of like, become a millionaire overnight, change your body in 30 days, like do whatever, you know? And yeah. I think it's as a business owner, just as a business owner, I'm like, we're all here to play the long game.
Yes.
And if you're going to play the long game, you got to pace yourself and just like really put one foot in front of the other. If you're going to play the long game in a way that you're going to maintain your sense of sanity and health. So. Mm-hmm.
And so then I wonder, can I put forth a challenge, and then you're the expert, so tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like diving into the deep end of I'm going to do 100% outside my comfort zone. I wouldn't call that vulnerability anymore. I would call that something entirely reckless and full of abandon. But vulnerability to me is taking those smaller risks. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, I do think we live in a pretty manic culture too. And mm-hmm. again, I think it is in our culture. I think that this whole piece of like this idea that transformation happens overnight, mm-hmm. This idea that everything needs to be big. But I think the benefit of moving slowly, particularly when it comes to like vulnerability or being authentic or taking mm-hmm. risks, is that we need to be able to make a move, look at the environment, assess how it went, see how we're feeling, mm-hmm. integrate the experience, make another move. Like to me, that is a sustainable way of moving mm-hmm. through the world. And I think when you are diving into the deep end with reckless abandon, there's this whole physiological piece that happens, which is that you go into a state of shock. And from that place of shock, it's almost impossible to like really ask yourself the questions of like, did that feel good? Did that feel right? Do I need to recalibrate? Do I need to like adjust the way I'm doing this at all? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's so much beauty that just came out of what you said there. And I love, okay, which one? We'll go to extremes first because that's what we do. The jumping into the deep end with reckless abandonment and finding yourself in this state of shock, you have deprived yourself the opportunity of self-awareness, that requirement for emotional intelligence and that authenticity, because authenticity comes from knowing how we feel and where we're at.
Yeah.
And we can go psychologically on why this shock is there. We can go physiologically on why that shock is there. We can go emotionally, energetically, but any category of change that you want to touch says too much, too fast, and our poor little bodies and brains can't handle it.
Yeah. Yep.
So we really are actually depriving ourselves of that opportunity and that self-awareness.
Yeah, I also think I'm thinking a little bit about, you know, one of the competences and the framework of EI that I work in is positive outlook, right? And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, one point to make there is that we are all wired for negativity bias. So we do have this piece of us, many of us, that sort of sees deficit before we see mm-hmm. positivity, right? But I think the thing about the pendulum swing is that when we swing so far in another direction or we make this really big drastic move, it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater sometimes of where we've been, right? Instead of seeing like making a more kind of grounded assessment of like, okay, here are some things that need to change, but what are some things about what I'm doing now that are working that I can take with me as I make that change? Mm. And this, I think, is where we get into a more nuanced way of thinking, which you touched on before, and moving out of this sort of binary all or nothingness of like, I'm either this way or I'm that way. And it's like, no, there are qualities of being this way and qualities of being that way. And like a really, you know, a practice is to sort of analyze and dissect what are all those qualities and how do I bring them together? That it's not an either or, but a much more sort of nuanced integration.
Mm-hmm. And on that point of integration, the other thing that you said that I thought was so beautiful was having a conversation with the environment. And I think this next bit is a little bit culturally not popular to say, which is there is this very big push, and I agree to elements of it, where there's this push to say, showing up, this is me, this is how I am, deal with it.
Mm.
And you know, for large populations of people, whether it is by race or ableism or ageism, diversity, LGBTQ, like so many categories, there is an element of pushing that boundary of standing up and being just present and taking up space that you deserve in the world. But that doesn't negate the conversation of the system that we are in. Mm. And so by doing that 10% and doing that push, there is a conversation of change that comes along with it, rather than, again, putting yourself or the system into shock where there can't be any dissection and self-awareness and reflection on what's happening, because we've gone so far over the deep end that that hard wire for negativity bias is kind of all we have left.
Yeah, you're bringing me back to something. I think we talked about this when we talked a couple of months ago, and we were talking about boundary setting. And there was something a couple months ago that I was working with in my own practice and in my own self, which is feeling the difference between setting a boundary in a way that is reactive and othering, versus setting a boundary in a way that feels much more agile and present. And one of the kind of visual pieces that I have been working with is, when I set a boundary, am I putting up a wall of energy and just being like, I am this way, this is me, take it or leave it, here's my boundary? Or am I envisioning the boundary coming up from underneath me, where I'm saying, this is me, I am right here, and being open to interact and have feedback on where my position in the system is or how I'm showing up, right? And I think for me, this is like a different in like a different energetic quality of like the pushing and the resistance and the kind of claiming our stake or like rooting a flag in the ground with this kind of aggression versus a kind of softness to our boundaries. And sometimes when I think, I feel that when I myself have like declared something with all certainty, part of me is actually uncertain about it. When I'm most certain about something, I'm actually have a much more softness, and the clarity leaves room for a more dynamic conversation, because I'm not trying to defend a position. There's something that's just so clear and aligned within me. So does that make sense, or does that feel related to what?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think about that too, in terms of where do you go from here? If you are putting all of your energy and all of your authentic voice into "you shall not knock me down," then that's the line that you've staked. And now you have to fight to maintain it. You have to put all of your energy into defending this line in the sand. And I don't know about all of you guys, but at some point, like, I got to take a nap. Like that is...
And then at some point I'm like, actually not even sure I drew the line in the right place. And now I'm feeling like I drew it so hard, I can't retract it.
I was like, how did that get that? That was me. No, it wasn't me. It was the cat.
Never mind.
Yeah. Never mind. You don't have the room to, again, engage with that dissonance.
Yeah.
See if that line is still yours. See if you want to move and engage around it. And you can't take a nap and get a snack.
Yeah. Yeah, righteousness is exhausting, isn't it?
Versus this yes and.
Yeah.
Here I am, and I am part of this system. Yeah. Here I am as an individual with invisible handicaps. I'm speaking of myself now. And I am part of a system that doesn't see them. And I have to have boundaries about what I will tolerate and what I will do for myself. And I have to acknowledge I'm in a system that doesn't see, doesn't care most of the time. You know, here I am as a bisexual in a cishet relationship, and I'm in a system that is only going to see one thing as another. There is more of a dance. There is more of a nuance that comes from that than this is me, take me or not.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, I think part of, you know, I think a lot of what we fail to do sometimes is remain curious, like always operate from a state of curiosity. And I think that's rooted in a lot of things, you know, one of which for myself has been about anxiety and control, right? I'm like, oh, it can feel really vulnerable to sit in a state of curiosity. It can feel like I have way more control to sit in a state of sureness and knowing and not asking questions. But that state of curiosity, the more I settle into that in my own life, in my own practice, the more peaceful I've become. And the more I'm able to actually pan out and see the whole system and understand that things are constantly moving and in flux, and that the timeline of existence is much larger than the kind of minutiae of my day. And for me, being able to pan out that wide and just sit with a lot of curiosity and acknowledge that there's a lot I cannot see or know just based on the nature of my human existence, brings a certain comfort, but that's taken a lot of sort of practice to get there. Right. And I think it's like, cause it can also be anxiety provoking at first.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, it's taken a lot of 10 and 15%.
Yeah.
So that you don't jump in that deep end of anxiety.
And a lot of saying like, okay, here's all of the areas where I'm not sure, or all of the things that I can't see, but back to this sort of sense of what's working, like the more I can sit comfortably within myself, the more I can sit comfortably within my family, the more I can sit comfortably within my relationships, the more I can say, it's okay that I don't know. And it's okay that I can't see all of that, because I have these things in my life that feel very grounded and nurturing and very tethering. And so I can rely on those in the face of all of this uncertainty, right? And so there's a piece there too.
Oh, I love that. And to me, that's bringing up some images about what authenticity, vulnerability, boundaries. I mean, these are all really big buzzwords, I think, in the last few years. And I think there is a lot of, again, cultural systems. I'm so glad we started the conversation with this kind of accidentally, but it's beautiful. A lot of cultural systems that are giving these words a lot of rigid and immovable force behind them. And in the way that you were just talking about knowing where you come from and knowing what is certain, you know, and our generations are dealing with a lot of anxiety and depression at unprecedented rates. And again, we'll go back to that Krishna Murphy quote, you know, what society are we in? That can we think of these words, authenticity, vulnerability, boundaries, as something that tethers us? I'm thinking of a buoy in the water. Something that is really fluid and moves, and you're not going to get pulled too far out to sea from this buoy, but it is not a cement wall that you have used to cage yourself in and that only very select few are safe enough to enter.
I think
our system, much like high school, is giving us a lot of mixed messages about what these words mean and how we enact them.
Yeah.
And then how that shows up in us is anxiety and control and depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I'm just thinking about social media a little bit. I mean, this is like something I struggle with so much, which is sort of thinking about how do we know, how do we feel when we're interacting with content? How do we feel or experience the difference between what truly feels authentic and performative authenticity? Because I think as these things have become buzzwords, there is a performative nature around the authenticity.
Which is ironic.
Which is ironic, right? And that's the rub. It's like,
you're not doing what you're saying you're doing anymore. This word does not mean what you think it means.
Yeah. And I mean, so much of what you're talking about is, you know, the ability just to be agile and the ability to acknowledge, you know, when you gave the metaphor of the buoy, it's so beautiful because the system that the buoy is in is the system of the ocean, which is connected to the waves and the moon and all of these other systems, right? And it's so as things are constantly changing in those systems, the buoy is going to be asked to be pulled in different directions, and that's okay. And how can you gracefully do that while still staying anchored to something, right?
Yeah. And to extend on that metaphor, then in that 10, 15%, I don't know why I needed to make it a range because you said 15%. So we'll go back to that. the 15% is when you become a stronger swimmer, you can go deeper.
Right.
You know, when you figure out how to punch a shark in the nose, you can go deeper. But while that is outside of your 10-15%, it makes no sense to release yourself in that buoy to go too deep. Yeah. But also, it doesn't make sense. Well, there will be situations, there will be challenges where your resilience is not what it was yesterday or last week or the year before.
Mm-hmm. 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 And for so many reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes sense to pull that buoy closer to shore.
Yeah.
And then you get to rest and you're not treading as much water and you're maybe not worried about jellyfish and you can look for sand crabs. But if your resilience, I like looking for sand crabs, but if your resilience is high, it would be very boring to be stuck on the shore.
Yeah.
That's where we have that fluidity of authenticity and self-awareness and the emotional intelligence to say, where am I tethering myself today? How long of a lead can I give myself? Not how high does my wall need to be?
Yeah. What you just said is so beautiful. And I think like to acknowledge that how we are one day or one week is not how we are at another point in time. Right. And I think mm-hmm. this is a key part of that self-awareness practice is sort of starting to, first of all, acknowledging that we all have different biorhythms, right? I mean, mm-hmm. and we're full of cycles. I mean, we're like, we have hormonal cycles, we have astrological cycles, we have developmental cycles, you know, we have cycles mm-hmm. of grief, right? So there are all these things that are constantly rotating and changing, and to mm-hmm. be able to actually check in each day and say, like, where am I today? Like, mm-hmm. what is my tolerance level today? And if I know that I'm in a place that I'm under-resourced in any way, how can I, you know, if I have the privilege to adjust external factors to be able to, you know, be where I am, right? And again, that is a privilege. I mean, that's like not always possible mm-hmm. for every person and in every situation. So I want to presence that too, because that's important.
I agree. And the resources that we have within that privilege are going to be different across the board. And so where someone might have the privilege and the place to say, ha, sabbatical, I am out of here.
Yeah.
Which sounds lovely. I'm not that person. I'm working hard to be that person. You know, the other side of that could be as simple as phone. I am getting rid of all of my social media.
Yeah.
Shall not pester me.
Yeah.
And if that is the only thing that you can do to limit the pull on your resources, it's still a thing you can do and it matters. So
yeah,
I love the presencing to privilege, but I also, because we are individuals with agency, there is always something.
Yeah. And something can be small. And this is back to your point of like, it doesn't have to be diving into the, like, we mm-hmm. don't have to decide we want to exercise and then go out and train for a marathon. Like, right. In fact, we could really destroy our bodies that way. Taking apps off the phone, you know, this is in my coaching training. I love that you brought that up. That was a practice that we were challenged to do, which is to, just be really mindful of when we checked our phones and to block off certain times in the day when we shut our phones off. And, you know, it was an extensive training, an extensive mm-hmm. sort of dive into emotional intelligence, but that little practice mm-hmm. is one that was actually the most challenging for me. And I was like, this is so dumb. I can't believe this is so challenging for me. Right. I mean, I was like so mad at myself. I was like, oh God, but it's small, but the impact is huge. You know, yeah. The action is small, but the impact is huge.
And I always want to come back around as we keep talking about that 15%, is that sabbatical can be nothing but time away if it is spent on your phone the whole time.
Right.
That if we are not doing the simple little things, and really, as I've been doing this podcast for 2 years, I'm actually recording on our 2-year anniversary. This podcast. Right now, this moment.
Oh, I feel so honored. That's such a, let's celebrate that. That's great.
August. But the truth that comes out through all of these conversations is the things that change, mm-hmm. the things that make such a big difference are the simple little things, are the 10%, the 15% of watching the apps on your phone, drinking more water instead of sugar, sleeping a little bit more, even if you are working multiple jobs and have a family, sleeping a little bit more or finding other ways for rest and movement. It's not the marathons and the sabbaticals and the whole, you know, 30-day cleanse or whatever else that we can do. It's the little things.
Yeah, it makes me want to ask you, Carly, actually, like, why, what is it about a sabbatical? So why, what is the motivation for wanting a sabbatical for you?
I'm just tired.
Yeah, totally.
If I'm being very authentic with our listeners here. You know, I have been a small business owner since I was 23 years old. I am incredibly unemployable, but I'm a good boss most days. And you don't get to set down a small business in the way that you get to take a vacation when you are employed elsewhere. And so, you know, the idea, my husband and I actually came up with this idea a couple of years ago, is that we wanted to be able to travel and find a way to make my business sustainable in that interim and go spend 6 weeks living somewhere else and learning somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the sabbatical is to me. We had Scotland high on our list. This was pre-2020 that we made this plan. And just to go and live and experience and be very present in a life that is not keeping the lights on for my patients and my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels very powerful. And so, and then actually to the point of this conversation, since I'm laying it all out there, what we found in the, I'll say this carefully, but I do think that in any challenge and risk and dissonance, we have to look for that gift and that poking on self-awareness. In the gift of 2020, it was realizing, how can we go, where can we go, be present in our day to day? If that's what we are looking for, don't wait.
Yeah.
And we created a very lovely home practice of being in the dirt of our garden, walking around our neighborhood, really getting to know our neighbors and creating that in-depth dive into a culture that was frankly right outside our door, that we hadn't done in that way for many, many years. And because of systems and culture, work, travel, social media,
right?
We got it.
That's such a beautiful example of finding something in a small moment. And that was kind of like underneath my question. I think it's always such a beautiful thing to ask ourselves, like, why do I want that thing? Like at the core, like, and you know, there is a lot of value, I think, in taking 6 weeks off at a time. And just from a nervous system perspective, what gets to sort of happen or unravel in that, in that length of time. But I think some of the things that we want can be achieved through much smaller efforts. If we just really get to the core of what is that thing we want, right? So if it's a sense of peace and if it's a sense of connection with your partner, then there are probably more manageable, sustainable ways to work that into your schedule.
Yeah. And I think that that's when it comes down to, and I really appreciate you poking with that question, is about that. That was a example of being vulnerable and self-aware about, why am I doing this? And what am I really hoping to get this? Now, I still love Scotland and the rural.
I want to go to Scotland's on my bucket list too.
I went when I was 13. It's been on my heart for 23 years now.
Yeah.
And so that will always remain there, but now I am not going there for all of these things that I have created in my home. And in a way that is much kinder and much more fair. Doesn't sound like good grammar. It's more fair anyway, to the experience of that travel, because now it is the travel for everything that Scotland is, not everything that I wish to create with my partner and my daughter and my connection with community. I've done that.
So much pressure that we put on these things, right? When we build everything into one big experience. Yeah.
And I think that's the deep end again. That's the extremes. So, you know, take that big hairy dream of yours, because it is still a year of conflict and crisis and limitations. You know, lots of countries are closing their doors again. Lots of shutdowns are coming again. And what is the small thing you can do within that big hairy dream that is achievable, that 15%?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is so much fun.
It is. I'm like, I appreciate you. Thanks for sharing some about yourself. And, you know, I'm sure all your listeners out there appreciate it as well.
Thank you. I am sitting in that little threshold of that was just uncomfortable enough. So it can be done. I did not melt into a pile of goo.
You're modeling. See, you're modeling for everyone out there and modeling for me in this moment. It's beautiful. Well,
thank you. Thank you for turning the pages on me. It doesn't happen a lot in my podcast. And I honestly really kind of enjoy it when it goes, but when the poking goes both ways. So we've covered just such a broad range of what I think we really are genuinely talking about is that authenticity, that vulnerability, what risk and dissonance can give to us and our place within the greater world. I would love if there is looking for a bookend for this lovely wandering conversation, how do you see these things working out with individuals within leaderships and leadership and companies, knowing that we are all leaders within our lives? So whether or not we are CEOs or not, but mothers and fathers at the head of a table or even within our neighborhood community, what are we taking from this? How does this matter to us individually?
Well, I guess the first thing to say, like pivoting to talk more specifically about leadership is that, you know, and again, I do have a very like all-encompassing definition of leadership. So I, you know, I'm like, you don't have to be the CEO of a massive organization to be a leader. We're all leaders in different areas of our lives. So I want to reiterate that point and highlight that. And part of being in a place of leadership, wherever that is being in a position to model, similar to what I just said, you know, about you sharing vulnerably, because you are the leader of this podcast and, you know, people are consciously or unconsciously looking to you in this moment when they're listening. And so, you know, one of the things that we know, for example, bringing it back to emotional intelligence is that, there is a wonderful woman. Her name is Vanessa Druskett. She's at the University of New Hampshire, and she studies emotional intelligence in teams. So, looking less at kind of how are the competencies of emotional intelligence manifesting individually, but how are they manifesting in groups? And you know, one of the core things about high performing teams is that there is a sense of belonging, and in order to cultivate that sense of belonging, there has to be vulnerability. And sometimes the first person to take that vulnerable step does have to be the leader, because they are the one that is modeling, right? And so much—I mean, it's the same way. They are the one that is too. You know, we didn't really touch on this, but there's a whole piece around emotional contagion, right? Which is that the leader, the most powerful person in the room, their emotions are quite literally contagious. They often set the emotional tone for the room or for the group, you know? Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think like that's really, you know, I work with a lot of leaders who have like a deep belief, like, well, nobody wants to hear about me, or nobody, or I don't want to overly divulge. And I'm like, it's not about overly divulging or sort of narcissistically bringing people into your whole life story or doing this great navel gazing. These can happen, like, you know, again, in these really small moments where you're just modeling the fact that you are too a human with a story, with values, with a perspective, with a whole background that you're informed by, which gives space for other people in the organization or on the team to feel accepted in their humanity as well. Right. So
beautiful. Yeah. I love that. The leadership and contagion piece, and we might just have to record a part two to keep diving in here. But when we talk about, you know, throwing way back to the beginning of the conversation and saying, we all exist within a system and our goal in vulnerability and authenticity is that 15% challenge, that leader, If we are in a leadership position in any area of our life, it's arguable to say that we are more comfortable. We are buoyed further out to sea in this position. And we hold that container where another person wants to test their 10 to 15%. And we make that a comfortable and safe gamble instead of an uncertainty if I am a fortress of perfection,
yeah,
you've all been listening for 2 years, I'm not. If I am a fortress of perfection, there is nothing safe about testing that 10 to 15% of vulnerability at me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we can create that container where we can all start to glide forward 15% at a time with that leader at the helm demonstrating and carrying it.
Yeah. And part of, I think what you're talking about is being able to gracefully recover from failure. And I want to say too, you know, I think these are like traits that we, the kind of conundrum about leadership, and this is talked a lot about in emotional intelligence, in an organization, people get promoted because they're really good at their job, right? Mm-hmm. But being good at your job, the tasks of your job, and being good at leadership are actually vastly different things. And so there's like this like kind of rough thing that happens, right? Where people get promoted up the chain and then they're like, oh my God, I'm leading. I'm actually not even doing the job I was so good at doing anymore. And now I have to work with people. And that's a whole other ball of wax. So I just want to presence that because I really, I think it makes the case for making sure that leaders have access to development, leaders have access to coaching, leaders have access to support, because the job of leading is complex. But I think what you're talking about too is recovering from failure, right? And I'm thinking personally, like as a parent, my daughter is soon to be 8, and I fail all the time in that leadership position. And the thing I'm constantly trying to model is going back to her and initiating the, not waiting for her to call me out on my failures, but again, having the self-awareness to say, I just really failed. And then going to her and saying, hey, here's something I really value. In that moment, I'm disappointed because I didn't totally live up to my values. This is a way that I failed or failed in this conversation or could have done better. And that has opened up so much space for her and I, and it's really been an incredible asset to our connection. And I think, again, that's just sort of one realm in which we lead and which being able to sort of be honest and be vulnerable with our failures can open up space for others to do the same.
That's so beautiful. And what a beautiful example in parenting being a place where that leadership is tricky and emotionally laden. We had a guest talking about navigating trauma and negotiations. And he has done hostage negotiations with the Taliban. And he says the most difficult conversation he's ever had is with his teenager across the breakfast table. And
I just got goosebumps when you said that.
I've only done, I mean, she's 4, but man, she packs a punch. Anyway, I know that we could keep talking for ages and ages, but this has been such a beautiful and juicy, nuanced conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And where can our listeners find and get more of you?
Yeah. First place to find me is my website, which is newrealmcoaching.com. And then I also publish monthly articles on the emotional intelligence competences on LinkedIn. So you can find me there. I'm not as active on other social media platforms. So website and LinkedIn are the best places to find me. And I take on, 5 to 10 coaching clients at a time. And also I'm usually working with 1 to 2 organizations depending at a time as well. So just to give you a sense of, what's possible.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening. I hope that you got as many goosebumps as Elizabeth and I did during this conversation. Definitely incredible ways to think about how we exist in the world, how we exist within a system, and how we exist within ourselves. Take a little bit. Try that extra 15%. Let us know how it goes. In the meantime, be well, and we'll see you next week for another episode.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.